Tired of the same old sports analysis? Then you need the SMQBs podcast. They're five attorneys, they're sports fanatics, and they're ready to make their case. Welcome to Sports Talk with an Edge. From Dallas, Texas, Ryan Pope. Michael Rooster Phelan from Richmond, Virginia. Patrick Milk Meichler from Tampa. Toby House Milrod from Philadelphia. Chris Bison Nace from D.C.
SMQBs, episode 228. Gents, how is it going today? What's going on?
How are we doing?
Doing all right. Doing all right.
Doing well.
We're missing Pope.
Missing Pope. On location in Scotland.
Where in the world is Pope? It's a new game. It's on our website.
He's looking for the Loch Ness Monster as we speak.
I would recommend that our listeners go to the website and check out the exploits of our golf analyst, one Brian Pope.
He is our golf analyst, right?
He is.
Yeah.
And we have some footage. Let's just leave it at that.
Oh.
So I recommend. All right. Milk, who are you bringing to the bar this week?
I am going to bring the Rays manager, Kevin Cash, and ask him why you would consistently throw this weekend to Cal Raleigh in the most ridiculous situations. Like, let's say that you had a two-run lead and it's the bottom of the eighth inning and Cal Raleigh comes up to bat and there's an open base and two men on. Would you throw to him or would you like intentionally walk him? Because Kevin Cash decided to throw to him and he hit a three-run home run and we lost the game. So he did it all weekend. He homered all weekend, every single game. Like, you may want to walk that guy. And I just don't really understand what happened.
He's up to 45, right?
He's up to 45, courtesy of the Tampa
Bay Rays. I'm
impressed
that you're still paying attention to the race.
I'm about to, this is the college football preview episode. So my interest is waning.
This is where it all goes. All right, House, who are you bringing to the bar?
Well, you know, if Pope were here, you know that we would have some Dallas something. So I didn't want to leave him out of this. And
I appreciate
so,
this. I appreciate this.
I would like to sit down and have a drink with CeeDee Lamb.
Yes, please.
Yeah. It's going to be a long year, buddy. After all, your quarterback is one Dakota Rain Prescott. But listen, when you're on the sidelines and you're actually not in the game, you have to get out of the way of the referee. So if you have not yet seen this video of the Cowboys, the Cowboys' future starting quarterback for this year, Joe Milton, who's like 10 times better than Dakota. Hopefully the Cowboys don't figure that out. But Joe Milton had thrown a long pass to Jonathan Mingo, and it was CeeDee Lamb was so certain that that this was going to be a reception that he's on the sideline like cheering his team on, and the one who is supposed to be watching the game on the sidelines following the play is the referee, who just decks CeeDee Lamb. He just rolls over him. It was
hit him
fantastic.
Right in the back. Man.
I mean, he's
lucky. I thought he was going to hurt his back.
Yeah, I mean, he's lucky he didn't like rupture a disc or something.
I mean, how many starting players in the NFL this preseason will actually be flagged while they're in street clothes? CeeDee Lamb is one. So, buddy, saddle on up, have a drink with me and Stephen A. Smith, and we're going to talk about the Cowboys for a little bit.
How about them Cowboys?
The preseason videos of the Cowboys have been phenomenal.
Oh,
Dakota,
when they're playing
riding the
broomstick?
Horse?
Yeah, yes. The broomstick, yeah.
Just...
Did you guys ever watch that series on Showtime, Shameless?
Yeah.
Yeah. No holds barred on that.
So you remember the bar, the Alibi, and the old man who owned it and lived in the apartment above the bar?
Jerry Jones.
Got to the end of his days and was just embarrassing everybody every time he opened his mouth and showing up, without clothes on downstairs. It's Jerry Jones now. That's all the guy does is
Dak
say
shook
ridiculous
hands
stuff and mess things up.
Dak shook hands after the preseason game against the Rams and said, "We'll see you in the NFC Championship."
Oh boy!
No, he did not.
He did.
Wow, that's impressive.
He did. You can see the. You can hear the audio.
Wow. Mm. All right, Rooster, who are you bringing to the bar?
I'm going to bring Jen Paywall. She is a 48-year-old woman who became the first woman umpire in Major League Baseball last Sunday when the Braves versus Marlins doubleheader game two. You know, it's only decade after the NBA and the NFL did this, but it's about time. She's, of course, already been sent back down to AAA, but apparently she's a good ump, and they plan on bringing her up slowly. So I'd like to just take her to the bar, get her a couple drinks, and tell her to stay strong and keep at it. Baseball needs this.
All right. I like it.
Just want to say, as a matter of gender equity, all umps can be booed for missing balls and strikes. Sure. And she badly.
She missed the first pitch. She missed the first pitch. She was doing her best. What's his name?
Angel Hernandez.
Impersonation.
She actually hit 90% correct ball strikes calls and was finished the weekend 13 out of 15 umps on getting the calls right. So not the worst, but you know, it's okay. It's her first time up.
Exactly.
Things happen fast.
Nerves.
There's no shame in that. Nerves. There's two guys who did worse. So, okay. I'm going to bring, and we're going to be drinking bourbon here, but I'm bringing Tommy Fleetwood.
Oh boy.
I mean, this guy, he needs a drink. He went into the St. Jude, the final round, up a stroke. Looked like he was in decent shape until it actually mattered. He missed the playoff by a round, continuing his streak of just not being able to bring it home. I think he's had like five top tens this year. Is that right? Maybe even
at least.
I think it's even better, like better slash worse than that. But he has the most career earnings without a win on the tour. Yeah. And he was oh so close.
Poor Geico.
And he sounded so like close. It in the post-round interview too. Just completely just helpless. Yeah. That was a great ending, by the way.
It was a great ending. Yeah.
It was Justin Rose, man. That guy's still doing it in his 40s.
Six top five finishes this year. He's got six top five. Anyway.
Seems like a solid bet to make for a top five finisher.
Yeah. We're just
you're looking for gambling.
He'll come around in the Ryder Cup. Don't worry. Yeah. Probably kill us.
We're going to pull up a bottle of bourbon and just drink slowly and for a while. All right, let's talk a little college football. Milk previewed it. But before we get into talking about the games, I want to kind of give a little bit of the lay of the land here. I think I got my research right. I'm sure you guys will tell me where I'm wrong. So this year we have a 12-team playoff format, just like last year. The big change, I guess, is in the seeding, right? So we're going to have straight seeding this year.
Perfect.
It doesn't matter.
Thank you.
Who wins conferences or anything like that. It's going to be a straight up seeding. So you're not going to have any wacky number one seeds like we did last year. The five conference champions will still be guaranteed automatic berths. And so that should leave maybe one spot for the group of five. I guess that's the expectation. Some of the differences, I mean, the realignment of all the conferences still continues to be, I guess, what's maybe the second biggest story. The biggest one we'll talk about in a minute. This is the last year for the Mountain West, the five teams of the Mountain West. That is Boise State, Colorado State, Fresno State, San Diego State, and Utah State, along with UTEP. They're going to all be in the Pac-12 in 2026. So last year for the Mountain West, UMass, I don't know why anybody cares, but apparently that's a story somewhere that they're going back to the MAC conference. And this
Can
is
we
a
just sh- make that announcement?
Yeah, oh I mean, God. It's here. Yeah. I don't know.
Some
it's important.
Some Minuteman fan is very UMass happy that they've made the pod.
Listen, if I start covering Georgetown football, then you can shame me, but that's okay. The top five preseason, I think, is Texas, Penn State, Ohio State, Clemson, and Georgia. A lot of shock and surprise there. But the other thing that's really probably the most interesting, controversial story to think about is the payment schedule. We've talked about it on the pod before. The schools, I guess, can distribute up to $20.5 million annually to their athletes this year. We think a bulk of that will be going to football players. They can actually make direct payments. There's a revenue sharing aspect to it all, I guess. And there's the cap of 20.5 million. They think it's going to go up over the decade to get to about 33 million by 2035. Of course, college football won't exist by 2035. If it does, there won't be a salary cap. And that's the big story, I guess, is how these payments are going to shake out. I don't know if this year it all came to fruition too late to make a difference, but it'll be interesting to see some of the guys who have moved and left schools and are playing in different places. So that's the lay of the land, I think. Is there anything else that I missed? Anything that going into the season we need to keep in mind?
I'm impressed that now you're a college football aficionado.
That's where it ends, right there. I got nothing to offer here the rest of the show. Milk, take it away.
Well, I mean, you're talking about paying players, and you'll be delighted to hear this because I know we're going to talk about the SEC first, but I would say going into this season, I have more uncertainty about the SEC than I have had in probably 15 years. Yes, the AP poll came out today. Texas is consensus now number one, but my top, your traditional top tier SEC teams, Georgia, Bama, Texas as of recently, all starting new quarterbacks, and really lots of replacements. And some of this is due to transfer portal, but a lot of it's due to just raw talent that left to go to the NFL. If we focus on Texas for a little bit, obviously the story in college football is this is Arch Manning's really rookie year. Yes, he played a little bit last year, came in, just minimally. Played one game against a no-name team and did pretty well. But all of these teams have problems. Texas has one returning starter coming back on the offensive line. Both their wide receivers drafted into the NFL last year, Matthew Golden, who everyone probably knows, that was the Packers' first-round draft choice. They're starting a new tight end. They do have their running back, Contrevion Weisner, who you probably remember from last year coming back. But I mean, the real story is, who is Arch Manning, right? Is he going to be the Manning, like his uncles, Peyton and Eli? There's been signs of brilliance. But Texas's biggest problem this year is their schedule. I mean, and it starts early and ugly, August 30th, having to play at Ohio State. So you're going to throw Arch into a massive, troubling environment pretty quickly, and we're going to know real soon. I mean, Texas has to play at Florida. Texas has to go to Georgia this year. I would say, yes, they're number one right now on August 11th. I don't see them coming out of this year at being the number one team and at the Unita. Will they make the college football playoff? Good chances as any of these top teams, but you had to put someone at number one. I guess you had to put Texas there, and who knows how Arch will be. I mean, yes, I mean, he's got the genealogy or whatever to be great, but I just don't know. There's a lot of questions on Texas. There's a lot of questions on Georgia. Gunnar Stockton came in for Carson Beck, as we recall, in the Sugar Bowl last year. He looked okay, pretty good. But he's starting this year at Georgia. He's got four new offensive linemen as well. He's got two transfer portal wide receivers coming in. Now, they did bring in Zachariah Branch from USC, who had a pretty good season last year. But think about draft day. We did the NFL draft a couple months ago. Jalen Walker, Mykel Williams, Malachi Starks. These were all guys you saw in the first round pick last year, all now being replaced on Georgia's defense. So what is Georgia going to look like? Again, hellish schedule. They've got to play Florida. They've got to play Texas. They've got to play Tennessee at Tennessee. So, I mean, tough schedule for them. And then the other top tier SEC team, Bama, they haven't named their starting quarterback yet. Probably going to be Ty Simpson, who's been there for several years. Was there, he sat under Milroe over the last 2 years. I think he's a junior now. He was actually there when Bryce was there his senior year. I think they're the out of the top tier teams. I'm actually more confident with Bama than I am Texas and Georgia because they are stacked on defense. A lot of guys coming back. Their front seven is massive. I think it's a bounce back season for Bama after four losses last year. Ryan Williams coming back at wide receiver, who had almost 900 yards receiving last year. And I just think their front seven is huge. But again, tough schedules for all these guys. The SEC just kind of beats themselves up like they always do.
LSU's in the top 10 in both polls. What do you think of them?
I'm getting to LSU. I think LSU, they have the most seasoned quarterback. Nussmeier coming back. They've got a great Caden Durkin. Aaron Anderson is their wide receiver. My problem with LSU is I freaking hate their coach. I don't know if he's ever going to bring them to the promised land. I don't know. I don't know what you guys think. I think Nussmeier's great. I think he's consistent. I don't know. Their coaching, I have major problems with. They can't seem to really ever win the big one. They're going to have to play. They're going to have to go to at real early. We'll know on LSU August 30th. They go at Clemson, top seven team. But they're going to have a tough. They have to play at Ole Miss. A couple other tough games along the year.
Milk, give us a sleeper team in the SEC.
Well, I'm going to go two. I'm going to say sleeper because they had a horrible year last year with seven losses. I like Oklahoma this year. They brought in a new quarterback, John Mateer from Washington State, i.e. thinking Cam Ward. He had a massive year last year. Washington State throws the ball around thousands of yards. He was the top transfer portal guy coming in. I think they have a huge bounce back season. If he does well, if he's the Cam Ward of last season, Oklahoma could have a really big, really big year. I like A&M this year. I know we say that every year, it seems like, but one of the few teams that has a starting quarterback coming back, Marcel Reed. I think they have five seniors coming back on their offensive line. So if this is the year for A&M, I mean, it's got to be now. And they have a generous schedule, not as hard as some of these other guys. But, you go down the list, Ole Miss, obviously they're starting in, Jackson, baby, with the Giants. They're starting a new quarterback, Austin Simmons. South Carolina has a Heisman candidate, Lenora Sellers, at quarterback, but they lost their entire offensive line and most of their defense. So I think South Carolina will be good. I think Sellers will keep them in most games, but they're going to struggle. They're going to struggle on defense for sure. Tennessee, we know the Nico disaster in the offseason. They're bringing it. They've got to start a new quarterback. Appalachian State transfer portal, Joey Aguilar. Lots of questions about him.
Come on, Milk. Let's get to who you want to get to. Come on. Let's hear it.
I can't even believe it's taken this long.
I know. Yeah. Oh, my God.
I'm honoring these other teams, so I don't show my bias. But I am very high on my Florida
game. Here we go.
Let's go.
Let's go, baby.
Go.
Look, DJ Lagway, I think, I don't care. I know Nussmeier, everyone loves to talk about him and blush about how great he is. I think DJ Lagway is the best quarterback in the SEC.
Wow.
Yes, he's a little fragile. We'll see about the injury, his latest injury. He seems to be okay in practice, dropping
better than Arch?
Dimes. I mean, TJ Lagway's actually played a game, guys. So
what is the doubt on Arch Manning? He lit it up when he came in last year.
He played against nobody when he came in. He played one
game. St. Mary's is good.
St. Mary's State.
This is what I want to know about Arch, and I want odds on this. Will Arch Manning be starring in an American Eagle Good Jeans commercial before the end of the season? And will it be with Sydney Sweeney? That's what I want to know. Well, they're missing out if they're not using Arch Manning in an ad.
I'd just prefer the Sydney Sweeney ads. But yes, he is a brand now, right? So we'll see how much that distracts him. I'm telling you right now, if this is the Gators' chance, huge amount of deep, they've got to keep an eye on. I'll tell you right now, remember Dallas Wilson. Dallas Wilson, freshman wide receiver. He was going to Oregon. He's a five-star recruit. Changed his mind at the last minute. Came back to Florida. Lagway is one of the best deep passers that you'll find in college football. He's going to have a huge year. They got a lot big starting running back. Jaden Ball coming back. Lots of guys on defense. This is if he does not. I mean, he's got to get 10 wins, I think, this season. If things fall off early and they play Miami at Miami early, if he loses that game, this thing could spiral out of control and he's gone this year. But I love the Gators.
House,
they're my dark horse to win the SEC.
House, I want you to set the over underline. What week is it that Milk calls for his coach's firing?
Week six.
Okay.
If we lose to Miami, he's done. There's no
week six. I'm taking the under.
Right. Listen, here's the deal. I'm glad you talked about coaching because I do think there's a lot of parity this year in the SEC. I think you're right. But here's the thing. The Georgias and the Alabamas in particular, even Texas, when these guys go to the NFL, there's five stars right behind them that would start for any team, be the starters above any team in any league in the country. These are guys just waiting in the wings. And what makes the difference is coaching. Like how quickly, this is the name of the game now, particularly in the SEC. How quickly can Kirby Smart get freshmen, sophomores, or first-year players that are waiting in the wings and get them acclimated and ready to go? I mean, that was what the difference maker was towards the end of Saban's career when he was having to deal with turnover like that. Like Saban, he just took the turnstile and he produced another national champion or another national finalist. It looked like Kirby Smart was going to do that, and I still think he can do that. Last year was a big, big question mark on Kalen DeBoer at Bama. Like, you talk about coaches on a hot seat. In Tuscaloosa, they're not going to tolerate another four-loss season, another shutout of the playoff or deep in the playoff. Kalen DeBoer will be a short stay if that team doesn't turn it all the way around. And I do think they will. I do think Bama's going to be right back where they were. But coaching this year where there is parity in the SEC, I think is going to be the difference. Who can take these guys who are just basically raw and turn it right into a team with chemistry that can compete in a brutal schedule?
Yeah. I think the schedules are going to be the biggest. I mean, the schedules for all of these teams. I mean, look at this. Texas at Ohio State, LSU at Clemson, Alabama at Florida State, all on August 30th. In the first month, September 13th, Georgia at Tennessee. September 27th, Bama at Georgia, LSU at Ole Miss. In the first month of the year, we're going to have a lot of these questions answered. So how Texas is, how Arch is, Bama, Georgia, all these teams. But yeah, you're right. I mean, the coaching is huge. You've got, I mean, a lot of these teams scare me though with so many. You're right. These are five-star recruits or four-star recruits. A lot of these teams are replacing full-blown offensive lines, which is concerning to me. you know, last year Georgia had they went to the Sugar Bowl, of course, but Carson Beck didn't have the best year. He goes to Miami and they pay him a boatload of money. But he was basically done there. And Georgia struggled. I don't know if Gunnar Stockton is the answer. Maybe they don't need him, but they're replacing all these guys on deep. It's just a lot of hurdles that they're going to have to overcome. So coaching going to become huge, but also the fact that these guys have recruited so well over the years. You're right. Now you're going to have a new five-star coming in and making a name for himself. So
all right,
it's going to be interesting.
We got anything more on the SEC?
No. Go Gators.
All right, House, talk to us about the Big Ten. Not that really any of these conferences matter past the SEC. I guess the Big Ten does.
What are you talking about? Well, this is the Big Ten's year, man.
This is where the championship team comes from.
Yeah, I mean, listen.
I love them.
For all you want to say about SEC, you know, in the last few years, we do have two champions coming out of the Big Ten in Michigan, Ohio State. Like, we can overlook them, but at your peril, because this year the Big Ten is going to put three teams up that I think all three could make the college football playoff. At least two of them will, in Oregon, Ohio State, and Penn State. These are three monster teams this year. And yeah, like Milk was saying, one of the top three teams, if you want to say top two teams, one of the top two teams is going to come out of week one with a loss when Texas plays Ohio State. Already, one of those two is going to be climbing uphill, but you've got Ohio State, the defending national champion, playing at home. Here's the problem. Ohio State, as we speak on August 11th, doesn't know who their starting quarterback is going to be. They have Julian Sayin, who transferred over from Alabama. And then they've got this junior, Lincoln Keenholes, who's was the third string, worked his way up last year. Right now, it seems like they're going to start with Sayin, but don't be surprised if Ohio State mixes it up this year. What you want to watch at Ohio State is, you know, I think Ohio State now has its firm stamp on wide receiver university. They just keep producing the most ridiculous. This one could be the most ridiculous of them all. Jeremiah Smith, the Rose Bowl MVP, freshman last year. He is ridiculous. Like, out of all these guys, and Garrett Wilson, and Jaxon Smith, and Justin Jefferson, this kid's incredible. Like, he is in the same breath of all those. So you're going to want to watch Jeremiah Smith, and you're going to want to watch their safety, because when you look at some of the top players in all of college football this year, their safety, Caleb Downs, is a player and is a leader. So Ohio State is going to get 10 wins this year. The question is, do they get 11 or 12? Oregon was undefeated in the regular season last year, and they've got a stud quarterback in Dante Moore, a stud edge, and you'll remember the name Ugalele. This is Mateo Ugalele, a stud edge at Oregon. But here's one of the most exciting, for me, players in all of college football this year. One of the most ballyhooed transfers is none other than Oregon running back Mekhi Hughes from Tulane University.
Yes.
Hughes moved over to Oregon, and he is expected to be one of the top players in all of college football. I think you're going to hear a lot about Mekhi Hughes this year. Oregon is going to get 10 wins. The question is, do they get 11 or 12? But for me, based on what Milk was talking about and this turnstile of players that go in and out and brand new players, that is not what you're going to find at Penn State University, where they return three seniors on offense, a Heisman candidate in Drew Aller, who produced 30 touchdowns last year, and probably another player who could also find his name in the running for Heisman is running back Nicholas Singleton. Now, Singleton shares the backfield with Catron Allen. Abdul Carter has, of course, left for the Giants, But while there will be some drop off, one of the best defensive players of the whole college football is Danny Dennis Sutton, who had, I think, himself 7.5, 8.5 sacks last year. He takes on that edge role of Abdul Carter. So, and then they picked up a great transfer from UNC, this Amari Campbell, for linebacker to play at Linebacker University. So what you've got is who's going to win that battle between Penn State, Ohio State, Oregon. I think one of those teams, I would be surprised if they're not a top four seed going into the 12-team playoff. Beyond that, you've got a talented Big Ten, but probably none that are going to make a ton of noise. You're going to have 8-4 teams in Illinois and Michigan and USC. Bryce Underwood at Michigan will be fun to watch at quarterback. You're going to have some bounce back from Washington, who fell off last year. Bounce back from Nebraska. Indiana's going to, I think, slide back. Sorry, Jeremy, but I do think Washington, Iowa, Nebraska, Indiana are somewhere in the 7-5, 8-4.
Indiana's got a new quarterback, though, who might really be a surprise. He could be a surprise Mendoza.
He could be. I think they've lost a lot of talent, and I'd be surprised if they compete beyond the 8-4 level with the schedule they have as well. Sorry to the Purdue's, Northwestern, Michigan State. I think it's a real off year for Wisconsin, Rutgers, and Maryland. These are all teams that are going to be hovering around 500 at best. But the name of the game this year, I think what we're going to be paying attention to on Saturdays is going to be Penn State, Ohio State, Oregon. Drew Allar is going to collect all the press at quarterback. You know, when you talk about the quarterbacks that we're going to watch this year in college football, it's going to be Drew Allar. At wide receiver, we're going to see Jeremiah Smith at Ohio State. And Oregon just has a balanced firepower that we typically see out there. And we'll see. I do think that Penn State, and depending if on Ohio State finds their quarterback, I think Penn State or Ohio State could, one of those two could be playing in that final game this year.
Yeah. Look, like I've said for years, Ohio State recruits like the SEC. Every single year, they have a top five recruiting class. They have the talent. They have the depth. They have NFL first-round talent. I agree. I think Ohio State and, you know, Penn State's got to go to Ohio State this year. So they're, you know, if they can get through Texas, and watch out.
Here's the interesting thing between those two. Does James Franklin at Penn State pull a Ryan Day of Ohio State and get the monkey off Franklin's back? Because the knock on Franklin is he'll get you to the top five, but in the big game, he's never going to beat a big team. Sure, he might win a Gator Bowl or a Fiesta Bowl, that doesn't matter, but he's not going to win the real big one. And that was what Ryan Day was suffering from. So that's going to be really interesting to see, with the monkey off the back, does Day play, knowing that he's not going to lose his job now, does he play a little bit more loose? Does he play with a little bit more confidence? Does he coach with a little bit more confidence? And what kind of pressure, now that Franklin has the deck stacked in his favor, what kind of pressure is on Franklin? Because in Happy Valley, there is a lot of pressure on Franklin to take this team and get it to the mountaintop.
Totally agree. He's the Brian Kelly of the Big Ten.
All right. Anything else on Big Ten?
I would say just you talked about him a little bit. I like Illinois a little bit more than maybe the credit you're giving them. I think they're going to have a surprise. They're like my sleeper Big Ten team.
That's a good sleeper. That would be my call too, as a sleeper from Big Ten.
They've got a really good quarterback who's coming back for like his fifth year. Keep an eye on them.
All right. Anything else? We're going to cover the other Power Five conferences next week, right? Is that the game plan?
Yeah. ACC, which no one cares about. And we'll do non-Power Five, and we'll talk about Notre Dame too.
Oh, that's right. They're not.
Rooster can talk about Notre Dame.
All right. Indiana's in the Big Ten, right?
Big Ten, yeah.
And I believe they are bringing back, this might be the most important thing in the Big Ten all year, I believe they're bringing back their Bison mascot this year.
They are.
Excuse me?
Let's do it. That's right. The Bison Mafia is back in Indiana.
The Bison.
That's it. Let's go, guys. That's who I'm all in on, Indiana football.
Indiana football. That's right.
All right. Let's go from college football to my next favorite sport, soccer. House.
The real football.
You're going to cover a little Premier League preview just for us.
Just a quick Prem preview. Here's a fun. I know you
great
guys are.
That was a great segment, House.
Okay, that was pretty good. But before we move on, let me ask you guys, there's 20 teams in the Prem. What year would you say is the longest running coach of those 20 teams? What year did he join that team?
2010.
2010? The 20, oldest?
2020.
I think probably it might even be Man City.
Nice, Rooster. So Pep Guardiola at Man City was 2016. At Arsenal, Michael Arteta is 2019. After that, of the 18 other teams, there is not a single coach before 2020. Like, this is what have you done for me lately league. And the same is going to – there is so much ridiculous money that's in the Premier League now. It's not like the NFL where, you know, a single business owner can own a team. That's so, so rare. These are world giant conglomerates – Saudi princes, this, you know, public interest fund of Saudi Arabia that are owning these teams. And there's ridiculous amount of money in the offseason after winning the Premier League last year. Liverpool spent $300 million. It's crazy the amount of money. So what's fun about the Premier League, which if people are still kind of getting their feet wet and all of that, well, I think it's a fun part of their sport. There's a lot of fun things. We've joked about a lot, like what if we did promotion and relegation in all walks of life, which would be kind of fun. But in Premier League, they have basically this open market of buying players. You're paying other teams in something called the transfer window. You're paying them a sum of money before you even reach contract terms with the player. And so, for example, you might pay, you know, Liverpool paid Leverkusen $100 million for midfielder Florian Wirtz. $100 million for one player. And then they still got to sign terms. And what's really fun is the season starts this week, August 16th, and the transfer window doesn't even close till August 31st. So 2 weeks into the season, a team is going to start with a player. And that player's not going to be on the team for long. I think you're going to hear about a couple of those coming up because there's some that are in the mix that just haven't been able to get done. But this year, the story of this year is, can Liverpool repeat? I think last year they won by a full 10 points, which is over essentially over three games in the 38-game season. I think it's closing a little bit. Arsenal, Man City, and Chelsea, who all finished in the top four. I think those other three are going to finish in the top four this year also, but I think it's going to be a lot tighter. Liverpool's defense has suffered a little bit. Yes, they picked up Frimpong, also from Leverkusen, to help their back line, but they've got some issues on the back. What's really fun is that five of the top teams, decided to go out and basically remake their front three, their left forward, their right forward, and the striker. So watch this year the following. Liverpool with Mo Salah. Of course, we've all heard of Mo Salah, like one of the world's best players and best goal scorers. Cody Gakpo. And then they added this Hugo Ekitike from Frankfurt for $70 million. That is like firepower city. Man City, Omar Marmoush, Erling Haaland, massive goal scorer. And they've added Ryan Cherki from Lyon. That's a crazy top three. Arsenal.
They lost Grealish and Savino.
Yeah, Grealish went to Everton today. They weren't working him in that much.
No,
I don't think it's that
fit.
Big of a deal.
Yeah.
Arsenal had Gabriel Martinelli and Bukayo Saka, and then added Victor Gyökeres. Gyökeres scored in 102 games for Sporting in Portugal, 97 goals across 102 games. That is crazy. He's one of the best pure goal scorers in the world. He's been added to their lineup. Chelsea, who already had Cole Palmer and Pedro Neto, added João Pedro from Brighton. And if anybody watched the FIFA Club World Cup, you saw what João Pedro could do. He's going off. But here's Manchester United, which is basically like the Yankees. It's, I guess, unfortunately, like the Dallas Cowboys. It, you know, in terms of international branding, there's probably no bigger club than Manchester United. And last year they finished in 15th, one of their worst ever finishes. Very, very dark days. They went out and spent $200 million and have a brand new front three. Matheus Cunha from Wolverhampton, Brian Mbeumo from Brentford, and this guy Benjamin Šeško from RB Leipzig. When you see this guy's highlights, he lights it up. So all five of those teams have a front three. It is going to be a goal-scoring bonanza. I think you're going to see a lot of goals scored this year, more than usual in Premier League. Other than those top four, look for kind of Newcastle and Aston Villa to challenge a little bit. Maybe surprises from Manchester United could get into the top six. Just so you know, last year we lost Leicester, Ipswich, and Southampton, who got relegated. New up this year is Burnley, Leeds, and Sunderland. I don't think any of those three are going to be staying. They'll probably be relegated. But the story this year is Liverpool, Arsenal, Man City, and Chelsea. Probably not a lot of surprises in those top four. Should be a fun season.
João Pedro sounds like the local red sauce Italian joint in your neighborhood, but
delicious.
House, give us two people to bet on for the golden boot. Who do we like?
Oh gosh. Well, I don't know how you can stop looking at Mo Salah. Mo Salah is going to continue to score a lot of goals.
Plus 700.
Okay. I really
tell us who to bet on.
I really like Cole Palmer on Chelsea. He scored
plus
a ton of goals.
+1700. That's a good one.
That's a good bet. That's a good bet. Now, of course, probably the something like plus 100, 200 is probably Haaland, Erling Haaland. I'm sure is probably high up there. So one of the better players right now without a team kind of is this guy, Alexander Isak. He's kind of in no man's land right now as it looks like it's a very good chance that Liverpool could sign him. He's kind of waiting in the wings at Newcastle right now. But I'm curious, who does it show as the leading bet for the Golden Boot? Is it Haaland?
Let's see.
Is it Salah?
It is. I lost it. I think it was who you said, Haaland. I think it was. Let me find it.
I mean, he's going to score a bunch of goals.
Sorry, I was placing my bets.
But there's going to be a lot of balance. That's what's interesting about the Golden Boot this year. There's going to be a lot of balance.
Yeah, you've got Haaland at plus 150.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Those are the lowest odds.
That makes sense.
All right, anything else on Premier League? Good stuff,
Grab House. A pint and enjoy.
Good work, House. Good work. Thanks. All right, who's got a punch?
It's this week's punchable face.
I do. You know, it looks like the business world is finally sinking to the depths of today's politics, where merit and decency take a backseat to boorish behavior, viral stunts, and gaslighting. Have you guys heard of this new meme coin called Green Dildo Coin?
What?
Yep.
No way.
I'm not Googling that. It's indecent. Nobody Googles that.
The whole
that.
Thing is disgusting. It's a meme coin that was created for tipping, online tipping, and meme-based trading, whatever the hell that is. And meme-based? Rather than marketing their company based on merit, of course, they name it Green Dildo Coin. And their way of getting attention is to perform these viral stunts, like throwing dildos out onto the court at WNBA games. Yeah. And amazingly, as soon as this company was identified as the sponsor of these stunts, their price surged 78%. And so my question is, what the fuck is wrong with anybody who would buy a stock, a Bitcoin, or anything based on stunts? I mean, are you that stupid, really? I mean, you first of all, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that most of this Bitcoin currency is created to make a ton of money for the first people in, and the rest of the suckers are like a pyramid scam. And all you know about this company is they throw dildos on the court and you're going to throw your money at them? Are you an idiot? And not to mention the indecency of the whole thing. I mean, it's just disgusting. It's disgraceful. It's disrespectful to the players on the court. Fortunately, their price cratered recently, and it's like down below 10 cents. It's just disgusting.
Rooster,
it really irritates the shit out of me. And I know I sound like get off my lawn right now, but what the fuck are you doing investing in something like
that? I hope anybody who spent one nickel on it loses everything. Loses everything.
And then some.
I want bad things to happen to these people.
It's just disgraceful, but it's no surprise when you look at what's going on out there in the world today. But it's really embarrassing. It's an embarrassment. It's the beginning of the end of Western civilization.
I think we're halfway through that, so I don't think it's the beginning of the end.
The final end is because of a dildo. Yeah, which we're saying. Okay,
taken down by a green dildos. Yep. Hey, listen, before we get going, let's not forget our sponsors.
let's go straight into the sponsors.
Oh man. As
I think we should go to injury board as our sponsor.
Let's go to injury board first.
Fans, yeah, that would know, be the we're best. All lawyers here, and we're fortunate to have some of our favorite vendors sponsoring our show here at the SMQBs. And we will start with injury board, which I think actually is a major holder of Green Dildo meme coin.
I actually own Green Dildo, guys. I didn't want to say anything. That's totally weird.
Injury Board is the number one plaintiff law firm networking organization. Check them out at injuryboard.net. We're also fortunate to have Assembly software on board for the second year. Assembly has the most creative cloud-based case management system out there, Neos. Go to assembly.com. We've got Digital Law Marketing sponsoring the show tonight. Digital Law Marketing is the best website creator for law firms out there, in my opinion, and their staff is just wonderful. Check them out at digitallawmarketing.com. They've also done the SMQB's website. And finally, our newest sponsor is just tearing up the AI space for law firms, Supio, supio.com. Thank you.
All right. Thanks to all of our sponsors. Who has a lasso this week?
I have a lasso. I have a lasso, which is some good news to really offset some of this other stuff we've been talking about. But, you know, there's not a lot of fun, good amateur sports that we get to talk about much anymore. Money has ruined most all of sports, and there are very few amateur sports that make their way onto television where there's a feel-good story. But I don't know if you guys got to watch any of at least the highlights or any of this stuff from now the Little League Softball World Series. So that just was completed before the Little League World Series in baseball, and it didn't used to get the attention that it's getting now. I'm really glad that major television is giving gender equity to this. This year's champion comes for the first time since 1978. It's been almost 50 years since Pennsylvania crowned a champion. Johnstown, Pennsylvania crowned the champion of the Little League Softball World Series. You should see some of the highlights that the defense played for this team throughout the tournament. They had four straight shutouts. Two of their last three games, they won 1-0. The winning pitcher, Reagan Bills, she pitched a complete game one-hitter and also had the one RBI double in the game in the fourth inning with a double. In her
pitching throughout the tournament, she allowed no runs. But what's really, really fun is the emotion. What makes this a lasso is if you watch like what it means to these kids, what it means to these coaches when they win a tournament on this kind of stage, knowing that kind of they're finally on a big stage on television. When you watch these girls after the left fielder caught the line out at the end of that game against Indiana from Pennsylvania, the girls from Pennsylvania, tears pouring out everywhere, jumping like crazy. I watched it and I was like, okay, this is pretty cool. I love watching the final games in the Little League World Series for baseball with those boys and these girls in the softball. That's like the complete antidote for most of what we're watching in sports these days. It's pretty fun. If you can catch the highlights, it's pretty lasso worthy.
Good one.
It's awesome. And it, like, you don't see it because it's the end of the tournament, the World Series, but there is so much that goes into getting to that point. They play for like 6 weeks or maybe even 2 months in all-stars, and like they've got to win their district, then their sectionals, then their state, then their region. And it's like, it's that ending when they win it all is a culmination of months of work.
A lot really of courtyard cool. by Marriott points accumulated throughout the
track,
right?
Seriously.
I've got a short comeback story for a lasso.
On the dildos?
Stetson Bennett coming out of Georgia seemed like a really nice guy. He was drafted by the Rams, and you could tell that McVay really liked him. And then in January of, I think, 2023, he was arrested. And for what was clearly not, it didn't seem like it was bad behavior so much as a cry for some mental health attention. You know, just banging on doors in the middle of the night of strangers and all that stuff. The Rams did a really nice job of helping him and not making a big deal out of it and keeping it out of the press. And he's back. He's back full time. He's likely the starting quarterback for the Rams to start the season because Stafford's back is just so bad right now. He can't even practice. But I just think it's nice that the Rams stuck with him. He stuck. But, he endured, he stuck it out, and he's back to where he was before he had that little break, and I wish him well.
It's a good one.
I didn't know he was starting.
I got a quick one, too. I just want to give a lasso, kind of piling on Rooster's talking about Jen Powell at the beginning, the first woman to ump a major league game. I want to give a lasso to crew chief Chris Guccione. I don't know if you heard his quotes about it, but at his presser after the first game, this is his quote. He said, "This is one of the proudest moments I've been part of in my entire career. I've been blessed with working playoffs. I've worked 2 World Series, All-Star games, and this one is right up there. It gives me chills. Just like even thinking about it and the magnitude, I was just sitting here going, it just kind of hit me right now." He said, "The magnitude of this whole thing and how hard she's worked. I have a daughter. And she was so excited to meet Jen. And this is just a great role model for girls and women out there. She's an incredible person, likes to have fun, works hard." And I think it's pretty cool for the crew chief to come out there and, put it in that context as a dad, right? As a guy who's got a daughter and who's getting to see that. So that's a quick lasso.
Since when do umpires have a presser?
Well, I think I think this was a special one, right? I think this... probably one of the only ones you'll see in a while, but good quotes for him. And Powell actually gave him a lot of credit about his support over the weekend and everything. So good to see that she had the support of her crew. All right. Who's got a buzzer beater?
I have a buzzer that finally we've got a really good blend between this podcast of five lawyers and sports. Brand new breaking news. I don't know if you guys know about the John Gruden lawsuit against the NFL. You'll remember Gruden was fired, particularly after some emails came out that probably the best you could read from them demonstrated that maybe he had some racist and sexist and homophobic views.
Maybe.
he I'm not the jury. I haven't read them all. I haven't heard all sides of the story, but he claimed, whether you want to say that this is the right thing or not, he claimed that these were leaked on purpose by the NFL, including Roger Goodell. He sued the NFL and he sued Roger Goodell. And what did the NFL do? They took hold of a clause in the contract that Gruden had called a mandatory arbitration clause, which basically says you can't go into a courtroom where you can have a jury hear your claims. You have to go into a small conference room where three people are going to decide your fate and hear the evidence. Normally that is stacked against you. And Gruden and his lawyers fought that, saying that that is unenforceable. Those kinds of clauses, those mandatory arbitration clauses, violate our right to have our case heard in front of a jury. Well, Gruden originally lost that at the trial court level. The judge said, sorry, you can't have your case in a regular court of law. It has to go to arbitration. So Gruden appealed to the Nevada Supreme Court where the case was filed. And there, the way Nevada works is first you hear your case by three people of the Supreme Court. And in a 2-1 decision, those two judges said, sorry, Gruden, your case has to go into arbitration. We're just going to follow that clause. Gruden did something that is rarely done and asked that the entire Nevada Supreme Court, all members of the Supreme Court, that's called an en banc hearing. Gruden said, can I have the whole Nevada Supreme Court hear this issue? They did. And about 30 minutes ago, the Nevada Supreme Court said that the mandatory arbitration clause was unenforceable, that cannot be used in this contract in the state of Nevada. And for that reason, John Gruden is going to have his day in court. And whatever are the merits of that case, he's going to have his case, like all of us, heard by a jury if it's not resolved beforehand by the NFL or if it's not tossed out for some other reason. But if it survives long enough and he wants to have his case heard before a jury, John Gruden will have his case heard before a jury. And that's a pretty cool story in the world of sports.
I love that. I'm glad you reported on that. I mean, I know all of our listeners, most of our listeners know how important right to trial by jury is. But, you know, and I often say this in opening statements, I tell jurors that, you know, this was the Magna Carta was the first place where it's written down the right to a jury trial. It's in our Declaration of Independence. One of the complaints against the king was depriving the colonists of the right to trial by jury. It's the 7th Amendment to the Constitution. And next time you should stop by the Alamo, check it out. It's one of the things fought for at the Alamo is the right to trial by jury. So this is no small victory. It's a big one. So House, I'm glad Chucky, you got to report that.
Chucky could save our democracy.
Good for him.
Who saw that coming? Who had that on the bingo card? All right. Any other buzzers?
I have a quick one. I know we're running a little late here. While you guys were all watching Fleetwood choke on his fish and chips, I was watching preseason football like a real American. And I just wanted to do a quick rundown of some interesting things I saw. Number one, Trey Lance for the Chargers has had two starts so far and has played significant amounts of both games. And damned if he doesn't look like a good NFL quarterback. You have to give it to Jim Harbaugh. It looks like, just from this small sample, that Jim Harbaugh has turned Trey Lance's career around. And interestingly, House, you mentioned ukulele. He is now on the Chargers and came in and backed up Lance. If he turns that career around, then Jim Harbaugh truly is a quarterback whisperer. We shall see on that one.
I saw him throw a nice long pass, ukulele. Yeah.
Jackson Dart looked spectacular. That's all I'm going to say. Jackson Dart, baby, for the Giants. And I am going to tell you right now, I am grateful that the Giants have the hardest schedule in the NFL this year. Because otherwise, what would happen is Russell Wilson, with all of his mediocrity, He completed six passes in the last preseason game for a grand total of 28 yards. He would probably win eight games. And then Joe Shane and Daboll will be like, oh, God, this is good enough to keep our jobs. We're going to get destroyed with Russell Wilson as the starting quarterback. And by game 4 to 6. Jackson Dart's going to take over, and it's going to be the beginning of a new era, and I can't wait. Shedeur Sanders looked like the first round draft pick that he should have been, and it makes me scratch my head when I look at the Saints preseason game and say, how in the world did you not grab this guy in like the 4th round with the shit quarterbacks you've got? Rattler and how do you pronounce his name? Milks?
Show?
Show? Between Rattler and Show, neither one of them looks like they could potentially be a starting quarterback in the NFL. J.J. McCarthy, I was really skeptical about that guy. I couldn't figure out why the Vikings drafted him so high, but he looked pretty good. I have to say he looked pretty good. Cam Ward didn't look terrible, but didn't look great. Did not stand out like Shedeur and Jackson Dart and Trey Lance. And then there are a couple of vets who struggled. One of whom was Tua. Tua looked horrible. Jordan Love looks like he's going to struggle to have a quick start again. It looks like a bad start for Jordan Love. His receivers cannot catch the ball. Thank God they drafted that guy Golden. That guy can catch the ball, but none of the vets on that team can catch the ball. And the Bengals defense still cannot stop anyone. So those are the things that stood out to me just watching preseason football this weekend.
Wait a second. Hold on a second. It did not stand out to you? A 70-yard field goal rooster? Yeah, Cam Little, yeah, come on ridiculous. Now.
Yeah.
Overreaction Monday brought to you by...
I mean, that's
70
a
70 yards?
Yeah, no, that's impressive. That's impressive. And it was, close to sea level, and it was humid. It's extra impressive. I forgot about it, to be honest with you.
What is that from the opposing, from your own 40? Yeah, 60 plus, 60 plus the end zone.
43.
That's crazy.
Here is my buzzer. Can we stop making predictions after 1 week of preseason football against Shedeur Sanders, against State Farm agents, Jackson Dart against guys who will never make the team? What are we doing, Rooster?
Tanner McKee on the Eagles would start in front of Baker Mayfield. Tanner McKee's better than Baker Mayfield.
If Jackson Dart came in against the first team defense.
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did.
How long?
My mom was questioning her religion after the Commanders preseason game. I had to remind her that all the Patriots starters played and we didn't dress 30 of our starters. 30.
Right.
I'm not sure you could take much from this weekend. I am
not disagreeing with the future of Jackson Dart Rooster. I love that guy. I've been talking him up on this show for 2 years. However, this is preseason. Let's let this play out a little bit.
Please.
I like Joe Milton. In the face of a blitz and hit little Jordan Humphreys with a beautiful teardrop bomb.
How do you say it? Build the statue.
Build the statue. Jackson Dart.
Anything else, guys?
Mark my words, the next Phil Simms.
Any other buzzer beaters? Because we got to get out of here on that.
Yeah.
That's a good place to stop right there.
Later.
Have a good week, guys. See ya.